Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. I know I've said it a lot. We've got one of our favorites on. We do. Mm-hmm. Dan Cummins is one of my favorite human beings on this planet.
He's always been one of my favorite stand-up comedians. I've been watching him since his first Comedy Central Presents came out. I think that was 2008.
Man, like that. He's been in it that long, yeah.
Yeah.
But his podcast, look, Time Suck, is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. It examines something true that happened in the world.
Lots of serial killers.
Yeah.
Weird shit, cults, things like that.
It's great, and it's super intricate and really well researched, and it's just 3 hours of magic every single time he drops one. I'm a big fan of him and his wife as well. They've got a new show called Scared to Death, and he is on the show here in a moment. But first, we got some sponsors to pay for this whole shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost, talking about GhostBed.com/drinking bros. 25% off, D'Anthony. Everything is 25% off at GhostBed.com/drinking bros. If you got that stimulus check and you're looking to quarantine in comfort, go to GhostBed.com/drinking bros today. That is 25% off of everything. The adjustable bases, mattresses, pillows, sheets, you name it. Everything is 25% off. And as always, their 36-month pay-as-you-go program is applicable for this whole shit. So get on it and use it. Next up, we've got DukeCannon.com. Whew, my faves.
I like how they named their body wash just Thick.
Thick. That's it, dude. There it is. Boom.
Yep.
Popping it up in front of your gullet. This is the very, very best body wash in the biz. Mm-hmm. And it smells delightful, by the way.
It's very good.
Veteran owned. It's got a high viscosity to it. You only need like a dime size of that to wash your whole fucking beehole out. It's nice. They didn't have a promo code up the other day, and they need to.
It's back now.
It's back now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Goddamn right it is. Promo code Drinking Bros for, what is it, 15%, 20% off there?
You know what? I don't know.
You getting the big boy totals there?
Let's see.
So this is, while you're looking, this is one of those products where you guys actually hit us up, and you were like, hey, man, we all use Duke Cannon. We love Duke Cannon. It's a veteran-owned company, and they always give back a certain percent at the end of the year of their proceeds to other veteran charities and stuff like that. So we reached out to them. We were like, hey, man, I think this would be a great fit if you guys are down for it. And they were like, fuck yeah, man. So they're on, dude. Mm. And, you know, it's $9 for one of these things, but they're massive. Like, yeah. This is a huge tub of shit. I think you can get all four. There's four different scents for $30, and they last forever.
And the code gets you 15% off.
15%
plus
off, yeah.
free shipping on orders over $35. So they have a lot of different products. This is, I mean, I use Naval Supremacy body wash, and it smells really good.
As soon as this came in, you jacked it.
Yeah, because I already used it.
Yeah. So look, man, Duke Cannon is the best in the game at this. We are lucky to have them on. It was really awesome that they agreed to do it, and you guys have asked, more importantly. So it's DukeCannon.com, promo code Drinking Bros, 15% off and free shipping at Duke Cannon. Last but not least, we've got Raycon headphones. Go to buyraycon.com/drinking bros.
Somebody asked me I think on Facebook the other day if you could pair it to your computer. You can pair it to anything that has Bluetooth.
Anything, yeah. And best wireless in the biz.
Yeah, it'll last a long time.
It just recharges in a little tiny box, and you're good to go. This shit lasts for 6 hours now. Mm-hmm. Price went up about $8 or something like that. Look, with the URL, buyraycon.com/drinking bros, you get 15% off, knocks these headphones down to $65. The quality is unbelievable. The sound is the best there is. And in the wireless game, I don't know anybody that's really ahead of these guys, unless you want to pay fucking $9,000 for a pair of headphones. But that ain't my world, Holmes.
No.
Not at all. These are the ones you see in airports when that used to be a thing, when we used to fly and see people in public.
You can still fly. There's a couple of flights every day.
Yeah, you can. But it is a ghost town.
It's weird.
Out there.
It's actually
weird.
Amazing.
Yeah, if you're flying right now, it's amazing. I haven't had anywhere to fly to, so
I'm going to fly somewhere just to go.
You should. Want to get away?
Yeah. Because I mean, we've all dreamed of being on an empty airplane.
Yeah, now's your chance.
And they have to, because of social distancing rules, there aren't a whole lot of tickets available for each flight.
Yep.
Which is not great for airlines because they're still super cheap. Like, you can fly to San Antonio for like $130 right now.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah. That's crazy. And gas. Gas is real cheap these days, too, man. I filled up my entire truck for $32.
I'm pretty sure the oil market crashed today.
It did, yeah. That's what I heard. It went down 80% or something crazy. And then OPEC passed that other thing last week where they agreed to stop producing gallons of oil. Didn't help. But Raycon will help you out for your listening pleasures. Go to buyraycon.com/drinkingbros today. Get yourself a fine pair of wireless headphones that are affordable, loud as shit, and last for 6 hours. D'Anthony, let's get into the show with Mr. Dan Cummins, shall we? And ready to rock, dude.
Sweet.
You ready, Dan?
I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, wrong Dan.
Yeah, wrong Dan. Wrong
it
Dan.
Doesn't it doesn't matter. I don't sell cars, I'll tell you that.
Welcome to Drinking Bros Podcast. We got one of our favorites back on the show. One of the best in the business doing it in podcasts, in my opinion. Mr. Dan Cummins, welcome, buddy. Where are you?
Very nice. I'm not selling cars, so life's okay. I'm in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I'm quarantined in Idaho. Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's
You're not selling cars, but Dan, our own Dan, before we came on the show, was doing some research on you.
Yeah.
And all of the dancummins.com.net.everything is owned by a Chevrolet Buick dealer in the great state of Kentucky.
That's right.
In particular, Paris, Kentucky.
Just outside of Lexington.
I didn't know there was a Paris.
Get yourself to Paris really? For a Dan Cummins deal. Yeah, they've been going strong for a long time. I remember when I did shows in Lexington years ago, all of my radio time was dedicated to challenging him to a cage match fight to the death. And I was going to Highlander. I was like, there can only be one Dan Cummins. And he never responded. He never reached out.
No, not once.
No, and all of my social media handles, everything, have been jacked up because they've been around for a long time. So, since before I got into comedy. So when I tried to get a website, when I tried to get, you know, Instagram, all of that, all of, you know, Dan Cummins on like every platform was taken by that car dealership. And
well, he's now worst. They're now Dan Cummins Chevy on Instagram. If
they changed up. Dang it! So after they ruined mine, now they changed it.
Yeah, you may be able to go back and get it now, but they still have dancummins.com.
Yeah.
It's tough, man. When somebody gets your shit, that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
So Ross Patterson was taken off of everything.
Yeah.
I was super late to social media and all that shit. And by the time I went, like 80 different variations of it were gone.
right.
The real Ross Patterson. Everybody's got something before. The only Ross Patterson. you know, the celebrity Ross, all that shit was taken. So I had to go with like a character name from a movie. So
who is this other Ross Patterson take? Is just a variety of other Ross Pattersons, or is there
kid
actor?
One was a child in London with a dog. And,
oh my God.
That was it. So one of them was just a dog named Ross Patterson. And they had an account set up for their dog, and they were just posting dog pictures.
Yeah. And I sent a bunch of letter mail to them saying that I hope they and the dog die, but I haven't heard back, so I don't know what the deal is.
I had fun one time with the mix-up with my name. I wish this would have happened more often, but somebody reached out on Facebook, and this is probably like 4 or 5 years ago, reached out to me thinking that I was running the Facebook account for Dan Cummins Chevrolet in Kentucky, and he wanted a specific like Silverado. He wanted like, I don't know, like a 2012 Silverado, and I just sent him the most ridiculous stuff. I was like, hell yeah, we got that. I'm like, if you can be in the lot in 45 minutes, I'll give it to you for 6,000 cash, no trade-ins. And I just imagine this dude showing up like, where's my 2012 Silverado? $6,000. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's so good. At least yours is something sweet, though, like this. At least you can make fun of it.
Yeah.
I can't make fun of a 14-year-old kid living in London, you know, just pale and pasty and all that shit.
I can.
You can?
Yeah.
Did anybody else have your shit?
No.
No.
No, so, my name is – my last name is spelled wrong.
Yeah.
Like it's – my family fucked it up sometime in the early 20th century, I think, or late 19th, one of the two.
So Holloway is H-O-L-L-A-W-A-Y. So, like, nobody's got that.
Yep.
It's just
perfect.
A mis – misspelling of a name. So you're good. You were able to get all your shit, weren't you?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get one goddamn thing. And it was to the point where there was a go-between. And I don't know if you had one of these in Hollywood where they were like, hey, we will negotiate on your behalf for all of your Instagram handles, Twitter, all that stuff.
No, I never went that route.
So I did. And one person was just like, no, this is my name and I had it first or whatever. And I was like, well, no, you're 14 and, you know.
Right.
But I understood sure, it. Sure. Where it was just like, hey, man, that's – I'm sure it's somewhat of a common name around the world, and it is what it is, right?
I would just like to see you standing over this child like what's his nuts in Friday standing over
like Debo.
Oh,
Debo.
Yeah.
It's like, who's Ross Patterson now? Just keep yelling into his face.
Yeah.
And spit in his face and walk away.
Man, you just got knocked the fuck out just after knocking this out.
Yeah, exactly.
He's British, too, so he'll just apologize for...
By the real Ross Patterson you just got knocked out by. Yeah. But I wonder that all the time. Because I was watching the Michael Jordan doc last night, The Last Dance.
Oh, yeah, they've been pushing that hard on ESPN since they have no games
real
to talk
hard.
About.
Real hard. The ratings destroyed. And look, there's nothing original content-wise out right now.
Right.
So everybody was kind of waiting for that thing. And... there was an old Ohio State Buckeye player named Michael Jordan as well. And he said, I'm the real Michael Jordan. And was like, man, that name is so common.
Yeah.
I played with a white Michael Jordan
in
Little League. Yes. White middle league kid. Clearly was born, you know, before Michael Jordan exploded and all that other shit. And to live with that name the rest of your life as a white kid is it's got to be the fucking worst.
Especially if you want to be about, like, if you're like an okay basketball player. And just like every pickup game, every fucking new team, you're just getting harassed. Oh my God. Yeah, because nobody wants to be the second best Michael Jordan.
Mm-mm. No. And look, it takes something, you have to do something magnificent in the world to overcome a name like that.
You have to cure AIDS.
So I look at that. Yeah, like
or disease that hasn't been cured. Cancer.
Or you can give a bunch of people AIDS.
Yeah, if you made
like
AIDS,
you can make a name for yourself one way or the other.
If you made AIDS uncurable again, if you came up with a new AIDS and fucked it back into existence, then you'd be the most powerful version of that name, I guess.
Yeah, like there was one person who started this whole pandemic. There's one.
Well, it was
patient zero. Right?
It sounds like it was a lab in Wuhan.
Right, but somebody did it. Either it was a doctor in a lab.
I don't understand
or
the lab
one
argument.
Dude.
I don't understand because it's like, that's what I've been hearing about that. I mean, the pangolin thing made more sense to me than the lab because I'm like, well, where the fuck did they get this thing if it was in a lab?
Well, coronavirus has existed for at least, as far as humans are,
since
for
like
70
the 50s.
Years, I think
like the 50s, 60s, SARS, they called it SARS too. But this one, where did this one come? How could this one come from a lab, like this version?
Well, chances are they were just fucking trying to figure out a way to cure it. And they accidentally made it mutate. That's what usually happens when viruses mutate like that. Like it's like that happens in medicine all the time. Viagra used to be a drug for asthma. Like that's what they wanted because it increases the O2 in the bloodstream.
And then everybody just got hard dicks.
Yeah, can you imagine being in the first trial of that?
You're like, whoa.
It increases the oxygen in your bloodstream. That's why it makes more blood go to your fucking dick. So I don't know. Half the room took placebos, I imagine, like a normal study.
Sure.
So there were, you know, half dicks and half not dicks.
Could you imagine going in for an asthma test and all of a sudden you walk out with this rock hard boner for 3 days and you're like, man, didn't do anything for my asthma, but I don't think I'm going to say anything.
Right.
I wouldn't even report any side effects on that.
I guarantee you there were a lot of asthmatic children born 9 months after that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Did you have that in college or anything? Did you guys do any of those tests? Because they paid a lot of money
I went to Gonzaga. I don't know if it was too small or what. I don't remember hearing about any of those kind of trials when I went to school. The main thing we all did then was just selling plasma. But no clinical trials.
Yeah.
Sold a lot of plasma.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had roommates that sold it all the time. And then they would do these weird like clinical trials for like 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And they would come back pale and like sweaty and like things were happening. One of my roommates, I was like, hey, man, I'm not sure what it is you're doing.
Right.
But you look fucking awful and like you could die. And he was like, but it's so much money. And I was like, awesome, man. You can't even get out of bed right now.
Well, I've been donating sperm blood for years.
Mm-hmm.
Have you really?
Whether people want it or not.
Yeah, you've just been giving it some?
Have you been donating?
Yeah, it's not really.
Is it your sperm and someone else's blood? Like, what's the...
It depends on the day, really. Sometimes it's my blood, sometimes it's not.
You give a, you do give away a lot of blood, though, every month.
Blood, yeah, because I take TRT.
And okay.
It makes your hemoglobin really high, so I get blood.
Got it.
Once every 2 months.
And they tell you to just to get rid of some blood?
Mm-hmm. What do they do with TRT, testosterone therapy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you on it?
No, I did it before, and I did it when I was out in L.A., and I went to some weird doctor that he was like, he was a shady doctor for sure. And and he gave me way too much, and I don't know, my levels were like 5-6 times what they were normal, and I was like super horny. Oof. And I was angry, and I was, my bench press was like NFL Columbine or combine. It was like, I remember I
read, or Columbine.
It was like a Columbine. No, but it was like, and I remember I did like I went from like, I was doing 225 whatever bench press, and I'm not like the never been like the strongest guy, and I could get it like 8, 9, 10 reps. And he jacked up my levels, and I was I was doing sets of 20 with 225 pounds, like I was a gorilla. But I also wanted to murder strangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that might be too much.
So I wish I would have done it the right way, because then I got off it, because my guy Joe, my audio engineer here, who was in a set before we started the show, he's doing it right now, and he is loving it.
Oh, it changes your whole life.
Yeah.
It really does. If you do it the right way, it changes your whole life, but it can also fuck you up. So you got to go to somebody reputable.
Yeah, I might want to try it again. My doctor's not real hot on it, but because he said there's something, he made me freaked out because I have like, there's like prostate cancer in my family. And he says that it can increase the risk of that if you do testosterone treatment.
It can, but so can eating a lot of red meat. But so there's a really good German study about red meat diets and prostate cancer, but it's mostly if you look at the subset of people who had high fiber diets, also it completely goes away.
There's
always there's a left and right, you know, on all those. Man, you just got to figure out what the balance is.
I should do it again, because I loved it. I was horny. I was strong.
Yeah.
I was alert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People talk about the physical effects of it, but the mental acuity and stuff that you get from being sharp like that is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, even like Joe was talking, like he was fading every afternoon, 2, 3 o'clock. He would just be so tired. He'd be home that evening with the family, just like no interest. And he said that since he's been doing this stuff, like his energy just sustains. He's been not only fucking his wife, he's been fucking his kids. He's been fucking his neighbors, and it's like, no, but he is like, he's strong all day. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is great, and it does do all that shit.
Yeah.
The murder thing, though, I can't tell if I just want to, always wanted to murder people,
sure.
So I don't know if that's the TRT or just like normal life.
I've always wanted.
That one's hard to block out.
I've always wanted to, too, but I noticed that when I was... really, and again, I think I was just given way too much. I would go from thinking things to just confronting strangers in public. I've never been that easy to snap. And I was just towards the end of it, several times where even like a friend, this comic Dave Waite, was like, dude, what just happened? And it was like somebody honked at me as they were passing around, and I followed them in the car, and I was screaming out the window, like, fucking pull over. Like, I wanted to fucking kill them. And then, like, 2 minutes later, I was totally back to myself again. I was like, wow, what was that all about? But you just have like these crazy mood spikes.
Oh, so you, yes, but you knew though, like in it, right?
Kind of. It was more like afterwards. I would just, it would feel like the anger was valid in the moment. And then afterwards, I was like, why was I doing that? like.
Yeah, for that, I've grown very distrustful of my own anger over the years. For that reason and for other reasons, like post-traumatic stress and shit.
So you can kind of, you just like, you just don't like, you're better at managing like those like outbursts.
A little bit. Yeah. It's like it takes a lot to set me off now.
Yeah.
But it was a process for sure. Like realizing what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
And being able to, you can know what's going on and still lose control in the moment though.
Yeah.
It's easy to do that.
I think if I did it again, I'd handle it better. Yeah, I would hope. But it was just, and again, it's probably like levels and stuff. And I had a friend at the same time who was doing anabolic, just straight up roids. And,
D-ball?
Yeah, he was shots in the ass, all this stuff. And he was, oh my God, crazy angry outbursts. Where I remember having a talk with him, I'm like, dude, you're going to go to prison, like, soon. Like and he looks like a guy. He's a big dude, tatted up to his chin, full like everything. And he like, he looks like he's already been in prison. I remember one time at Angels Stadium, whatever that stadium is called down in Anaheim.
Yeah.
We were there with it, and it's like me and my wife and then the two kids and then him and his wife and their two kids. So it was like a family outing. We're in the upper deck sitting in the front row, and some little kids were just throwing candy, like little – like almost like little mints or whatever, little hard candies. They were just throwing them at people in front of them. And he sees one, you know, zing by, and then he's like, I don't know who's throwing that fucking candy, but they better knock it off, you know, like whatever. And then a piece of candy hits his son, and he stands up and just faces an entire section of the ballpark and just screams. Like, this is like, you know, seventh inning, you know, it's still like light out. And he goes, I don't know who the fuck is throwing this fucking candy, but if I have to go up there and slap somebody's fucking daddy, that's what I'm going to fucking do. And then he just mean mugged the whole section. And he's all like veins sticking out. And then just sat down. And all of us were like, Jesus Christ, it's candy, dude. Like, he was ready to straight up murder strangers for candy.
I get it, though. You know,
I feel that all the time. It's like the Hulk. They ask at the end of one of the movies, what's the secret? The secret is that I'm always angry or whatever.
Yeah.
I think you just get used to being, it's like somebody that has chronic pain. You're just used to being in pain all the time.
That's a good analogy. You know what I mean? Yeah,
it is. I'm surprised doing what you do, like with Time Sucker, yeah. You get to research the most fascinating topics of literally human history.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of them are murders.
Yeah.
And we'll get to you and your wife's new show in a second, but I'm curious if that doesn't want to make you murder because you know more than like the average person about murders and how right. to get away with it. Like, is there ever a time when you've done one of these shows and then you just get off air and you're like, "Fuck, man, I could probably get away with just like one or two murders. Like, nobody's gonna catch me."
You know, it's like with the historical stuff. I will say that as time has gone on, it's gotten harder and harder to get away with murder. Like mm-hmm. most. Of the mass murderers, you know, serial killers who are really prolific, you know, they were either killing kind of like transient, you know, like it's like prostitutes, common, you know, serial killer victim because they generally don't have strong family ties. They're, you know, a lot of times, you know, with drug addiction and stuff, and they're gone for days without telling anybody already. And so it's, you know, it's easier for them to kind of disappear and not raise a bunch of red flags right away. And to just murder like a random person that you just don't like, it's actually, I think, made me more hesitant to indulge in that like fantasy norm where I'm like, I'd probably get caught because it's so hard now. Like 100 years ago, so easy yeah. to get away with murder.
I often daydream about living in the 19th century. I would have murdered everyone.
Yeah. And people, like, and people, no people disappear all the time.
If I had lived in the 1800s, no one would have been safe.
No, no one.
Like literally no one. My friends, my family, no one.
right. There were, I mean, oh my God. Now I'm blanking on her. Oh, Belle Gunness. Belle Gunness, it was ridiculous the kind of murder she got away with in the late 19th century, where she would just like advertise in the paper, like, this lady, I have land, looking for a new husband, like kind of like wealthy widow type thing. And then she would get guys that would, you know, come to be like possible suitors. And then she would somehow convince them to sign over their life insurance policies to her quickly after getting there, probably sex them up or whatever. And then she would just straight up just kill them. She would just kill them and just feed them to her hogs and move right on to the next guy. And she did that for years. And the families were suspicious, but they didn't have fucking detectives or anything back then. So they could be
And if you want to look just to see how crazy that story truly is, go look up a picture of her.
Oh, really?
Like, she's not hot. And the fact that she was able to trick all these men, she must have, there's something crazy was going on. Maybe it was like a cult like thing. Like, she was just a enigmatic character that was, or whatever the fuck, but I don't know. She's ugly. Very ugly.
I wonder too, if maybe she was just a little freakier where back then where people were a little bit more proper, whatever.
Right.
I mean, if she was just, you know, wild in bed or whatever, and they never show the pictures of the dudes. So if they were a lot older than her, and like more ugly, and comparatively, maybe she was like a catch, and she used her money. She, like the lure to her was like they were going to be partial owners in this huge amount of land she had. So I think she kind of tricked him with some money and stuff too.
I wonder what her accent sounded like. She was a first generation Norwegian American.
Oh, she had one of those hinged, 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 like one of those little sing song.
That had to have been part of the attraction, though. Yeah. Look, maybe she was the first one to throw a finger in the ass just during sex, and then hinged, hinged, hinged.
Do you like a little oofed, a little oofed in the hiney? Yeah, just something back there. But yeah, but now I think about. Oh, man. I mean, maybe learn more where I do have those fantasies. My fantasies around murder now are like somebody did something to someone in my family, you know, and then it's okay. Like it's all like revenge killings.
So it's like you want to be what's it? Brian from Taken. You want to be Liam Neeson.
Right. Yes. Yes.
You don't want to just murder for no reason.
No, it used to be more Dexter. That was my previous like long term murder fantasy was the Dexter type fantasy where it's just, you know, like some hardcore pedophile moves into the neighborhood and he hasn't done anything to my family, but I know he's a piece of shit. I know he's going to have, you know, probably like act on something. And then I would just like somehow magically snuff him out and not get caught. Now it's more like somebody fucks with a member, like my wife or kids. And then, you know, I have to kill him. But it's tricky. Like I've gone pretty lengthy in my fantasies about like how I get away with it. And now you got to think of so many things where I'm like, well, shit, like where are the traffic cameras near me? You know, and it's like, cause I don't want to like drive in the wrong spot. And then it's like, well, when you do it, I've had this fan. This is how far I've gone with it. You have to get like gloves and like duct tape. You have to, you know, first off, you have to kill them with no witnesses, which is going to be tricky. And then you have to take their cell phone. And I've even imagined where I would do it. There's a gas station near my house. I would duct tape their cell phone to the bottom, leave it on to the bottom of this long haul truck, knowing that when it goes, it's going to pull their cell phone signal in one direction. Then I got to like. There's some woods up past my house. I guess I have thought about this quite a bit. There's some national forest land up past my house. I know it doesn't get used at night, you know, when it's not hunting season especially. I have to go dig the grave ahead of time. So when I get up there, I put the body in. Then, you know, like it's a long, complicated system. And I also have to sneak out of my house, which is tricky and have because my wife won't cover for me. She's already told me that. So that's upsetting.
Oh, she won't?
No. So that's upsetting.
Why?
Because it makes her and the kids liable.
Right.
You
right.
Do that.
So she doesn't want me to do it.
You gotta have church and state on the murder.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. So now I have to sneak out. She sleeps hard. So I would have to probably give her some extra stuff in her sleep to knock her out. Mm-hmm. Then we have a security system that tracks when you open and close doors. So it's like it's a whole fucking thing I'd have to plan out. It's like because you can't trip that in the middle of the night because that could come back to haunt you.
We should do a show called How to Murder.
Yes.
Yes.
Someone who's like you who's researched murder quite a bit and someone like me who's done murder quite
yeah,
a bit.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay,
like,
okay.
That would be
a good tandem.
The best because I think there's a lot of people out there that need that. And I'm with you, by the way. So like my fantasies have gone all the way to the very end and what's
right.
going to happen
yeah.
and where and why and all that other shit. The ring thing. Always gets me.
With a ring.
Everybody's got a ring outside of their door. So in all of these cases now that I keep seeing these murder things, they're getting tripped up or burglaries or anything else that I see on like local news, right? They'll never put this on national news. It's those ring cameras now that are on everybody's fucking doors.
Oh, we have one of those. We have one of those where somebody comes. Yep, exactly. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, we just got one.
So if you were going to kill somebody in their neighborhood, right?
Right.
Because there's not a lot of people that don't live in a neighborhood. Or if you were going to track them from their house to wherever they were going to murder them, you're going to pass like 50 different rings, and that's going to be on there. You know, all of their security cam footage. And it's like, God damn it. The one that got me, because I've always wanted to murder as well, was the Aaron Hernandez doc.
Oh, yeah. So that was a great doc.
It was a great doc, but the problem is...
He's the dumbest criminal of all
time. Oh, my God.
And why the fuck did he have cameras inside of his house in every single room?
Right.
I mean, you saw that motherfucker with the gun right after he murdered somebody, and then the wife walking out with the...
She has the like...
All of it was on camera.
Right. And he dumped the, like, killed and dumped the body, like, so close to his house.
It was like a mile and a half
away.
With
chewing gum from his own mouth.
Chewing gum, weed. He was smoking weed.
Oh, my God.
He left a roach there. All of it. And it was just like, God damn. And it made it so easy that I was just like, all right, cool. But my biggest takeaway from that was the ring thing, where it was like, all right, if I'm driving to case somebody's house and then trying to murder them later, just trying to catch them on the way out, my car is going to go past all that bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody in my neighborhood has one of those ring devices.
Yep. And he was texting with him all the time. Yeah, like I think like ideally what you do is like you have to have like a one other person where you kill for each other, like a partner. And so, mm-hmm. like, let's say, like, you and I are murder partners. Somebody fucks with your family. You don't kill them. I have to kill them. Because then it's, like, Ooh. One more degree of separation. Ooh. But then it's, like, if somebody fucks yeah. with my family, then you have to kill them. Because that's a thing, too, where it's, like, a lot of my fantasies involve somebody that I have some kind of personal relationship with. But then you're a primary suspect if they do something to you and then they disappear 3 days later. You know, you're the first person the police are going to look at. But if it's a friend of yours, the fucking police are never going to look at them. But then, you know, but then you got to keep your mouth shut. I mean, I don't know. It's, why is,
you do need a murder partner in this life. But I also feel like this, like, I wouldn't have gotten married
yeah.
if I didn't trust my wife with a murder. Like, and for yeah. both sides. If I murder someone, she's not going to say anything. And if she murdered somebody, I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
Simply for the fact of I want that level of trust, yeah. one. Two, if she murdered somebody, I'm assuming she had a good reason for it.
Right.
Like, she's not a person who would just go out and murder at random.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I
What do you mean at random, though? Like,
Same goes with you. So you're one of my best friends. If you went out and murdered somebody after the show was over, and the cops came to me and said, hey, man, where was Dan during all this other shit? I would say, you know, he was here, and then I'm not really sure.
Right.
And I would keep it as vague as possible and move on with my day. I'm assuming you probably did murder that person, but I'm assuming they also deserved it as well. You don't seem to me like the person who would just do it at random. It would have to be somebody that really grinded your gears, you know?
I mean, there's targets and there's targets of opportunity. Like, a target I would consider somebody that I'm actively trying to kill. And a target of opportunity is like, this will be easy.
Yeah. But right? both are equally exciting to you?
It's never exciting. It can't be. So there's a guy named John Menery. It might be interesting to you. He's a CIA case officer back in the during the Cold War.
Yeah.
And he wrote a manual on assassination called Kill Without Joy.
Okay.
That's the name of it. You should look it up. You can, if you just search and
Kill Without Joy, like poisoning people's just drinks, or like really like sneaky ways or something, or
all sorts of ways, including direct hand-to-hand combat.
Wow.
The idea, the general principle behind it is that you terminate the life as if you were swatting a fly. Like, it can't mean anything more to you than that.
Right.
And it's a I don't think a lot of people are capable of having that kind of mindset, but more than you would think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you probably could do that, honestly. I feel like, just as much as I know you, I feel like you could probably do it.
Well, I do have to. It's funny because people talk about the morality of it, but it's like, and you know, and I haven't done it. So it's one thing for me to say it, but like, I don't feel bad about killing an animal. Like, okay, like a deer or something like that. I don't feel bad about killing a deer that you're going to eat, because like, I don't feel bad about eating a hamburger. And then I feel like I would feel, but the deer hasn't done anything to me personally or to other people I care about, where if somebody were truly, in my mind, like a heinous piece of shit, that the world would be better, you know, off without them being here. I think I would feel good about it, that I would feel mm-hmm. like I had done like a good thing, where people are like, oh, man, would you have trouble sleeping? I don't think so. Like, you've done a great service to the planet. Like, what's there to feel bad about?
I really think some of these billionaires like Soros and Bloomberg and these guys and the Koch brothers, they should all get together and, instead of funding political campaigns, just fund hit squads to go murder pedophiles.
Ooh.
Yeah, that,
like, who would stop?
We've talked
about this a million times on this show. That's what my dream is whenever I become independently wealthy.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill pedophiles.
Dude. I'm yes, that's a fantasy I share.
Oh, yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
Like, who... I wonder, 10 years ago, when we first, Jared and I used to talk about this back in the day, when we first started talking about this shit, I wondered, like, who the fuck would even say anything?
Right.
But now, who knows, man? The way the left has become in this country, and not just the left, but some more sensitive people on the right, are they really going to fucking complain? Maybe. Now I'm not so sure, I guess.
Well, like,
people stand up for the weirdest groups of people these days.
Right. That is a weird thing where... Yeah, I feel like some people are just in such denial over human nature. And it does tend to be like when you're younger and you're more idealistic and you're like, no, man, everybody, you know, deserves a chance at redemption. And I'm like, no, they don't.
No.
Like, there's a hard line that you can cross. And when you cross that line, fucking die. Like, no.
Yeah.
You made that choice. You put your finger in that kid's ass. The fucking, you know, your socioeconomic status didn't fucking grab your hand and shove it in a fucking 9-year-old's vagina or whatever. It's like, you decided to do that, so fuck you. So fucking die.
Yeah, I feel like there's a very hard line between selling drugs because you're poor and fucking children.
Yep. Yep. Agreed.
Yeah.
And if you can't figure out the difference between those two things, maybe you don't belong in society either.
Right, right. Right.
Yeah. I agree.
Honestly, like if you can't tell the difference between like drug crime and raping children, you may not be suited for the gene pool. You know, it's funny. We always talk about natural selection.
Yeah.
And what that means for us, and then the interdiction of society into natural selection. Now that we're conscious and aware of it,
yeah,
and aware of ourselves and all this stuff, we can influence it. Why aren't we? Why aren't we influencing? Like, I know we call that eugenics and stuff like that.
Right.
But there's certain traits. It's not about skin color or any of that bullshit.
Right.
Or even nationality or ethnicity. It's about, like, what are traits that we desire in our society? Pedophilia probably universally would be not one of those.
Right, yeah. Right.
Like, I don't know how many, like, if anybody said, yeah, pedophilia, maybe we can leave it in there. Just kill them because they're pedophiles.
Right, yeah. Right,
only a pedophile
right.
would say
only,
that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why aren't we just murdering all these people and getting them out of the gene pool? That's what I don't understand.
It is, yeah, it's a weird thing with like why isn't, you know, chemical castration or certain things like way more prevalent for certain predators at the very least? And that argument yeah. you just made about like the eugenics thing. I remember when I was a senior in college, my work study job was child protective services. And so I'd go with these social workers. You don't have to like go. You're dealing with clients who have either been temporarily had their parental rights suspended and have to do like, you know, supervised visitations or whatever. Or in some cases, you know, dealing with things where like, you know, the kids are taken away more permanently from the parents. And I'll never forget this one case where there was this lady who was a convicted sex offender. And the state of Washington decided that she would never, ever be able to raise her own children again. But she wasn't sterilized. And so every 2 years, roughly, this social worker was telling me, she would have another kid. And then the social Oof. Workers would have to be like, you know, the hospital would notify CPS and they would take the baby and put the baby into foster care from the hospital. And so
no way.
Yep. And so I brought up, I'm like, how the fuck is she not sterilized? I'm like, they should force her. And then I remember the social worker was like, oh my God, no. And then he brought up Hitler and he brought up the eugenics thing. And I'm like, yeah, but that's different. It's not the same motivation.
It's cause and effect. No, it's deterministic. It's they personally have engaged in an activity that has warranted that behavior.
Right.
Not just because it's not about their right to exist. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Right.
That's where I get off track with the, with some of the abortion arguments. Like, I don't know, they didn't have the chance to exist or some shit like that. That's yeah. the only one that ever made any sense to me. The rest of them are bullshit because the science doesn't back any of it up. But that's the only one that made sense to me. And in this case, it makes sense because there's a difference between killing someone whose dad was a pedophile.
Right.
Right? Because we think it might be transferred genetically or whatever the fuck, and then killing that person who is a pedophile.
Right, right, right. Exactly.
That's
big difference.
A marked difference between those two. So yeah. Fuck that guy. Kill him.
Yeah. Whatever happened with that lady, by the way? Is she still having kids?
I mean, I was only there for a year, but yeah, as far as I know, I mean, you know, based on laws, I'm sure she kept having kids until she was no longer able to have kids, and then they just kept taking them from the hospital and putting more kids into foster care.
At least she's not like a shark. Shark, like, eat a bunch of their babies.
Yeah.
That's why they're all like, they get pregnant constantly because they eat so many. I learned this from Chris Hardwick, actually.
No way. I didn't know that about sharks, that they eat their own babies.
Yeah, like apparently the mother shark, I believe Hardwick said, basically thinks she's a vending machine.
Yeah.
So she just fires out a bunch of baby sharks, eats half, the other half. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, it's a tasty treat.
God, how weird would that be if, like, that was the tastiest? Like, if you knew that your own baby was the best food you'd ever eat. And so you're
Well, Jonathan Swift knew. That's why I wrote A Modest Proposal.
Jonathan Swift.
If you haven't read A Modest Proposal, I all of you should go read it. It's Jonathan Swift, the guy that wrote Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah. Yeah.
During the Great Potato Famine in Ireland, wrote a short story about mm-hmm. how everybody in Ireland should have one child to replace themselves and then eat the remaining children.
Yeah.
And then if you read, like, and if anybody reads that and you're outraged, also look up the word satire and then read that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, like, oh, okay.
We don't, that doesn't exist anymore.
Satire, I know. Oh, my God. I know.
Doesn't exist.
It's amazing.
By the way, yeah. One of my favorite listeners, my favorite listener of this show we've ever had in the history, came up to me at a live event and he said, I heard you talking about murder on one of your shows. I want you to know I would never say anything and you can burn the body at my place.
That's a good fan.
He went into great detail of, he's like, look, I've got diesel gasoline. I live here. I have this many acres. He was like, they'll never know. It's only going to take, you know, 24 hours to burn the body. And he goes, I will never say a fucking word. He goes, this show saved my life, and I'll save yours by burning that body for you if that ever goes down.
Oh, my God, that's great.
Fucking A. Yeah.
That's why I got into show business in the first place.
For the murder.
I mean, we got OJ right here.
Yeah, we get a signed OJ Simpson jersey on the wall back here.
That's what it's all been about for me. A lot of people, it's about like, oh, I want to buy my mom a house.
Right.
Oh, I need the attention or whatever. No, I just wanted to murder with impunity.
Yeah. Look, if you keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars, you'll be able to do it one day.
It's worked out so far. No one's caught me doing anything so far.
No.
Now I'm just imagining that, like, for some reason in my head, like the acceptance speech about that or something, like an Academy Award thing, but like you're just thanking, you know, your fans for like granting
it's
you
a lifetime achievement award,
the ability to murder and get away with it.
I'm like 80 and I'm finally on trial. I'm just like, hey, I just want to thank everybody who's made this possible. This number that you're tossing around in the media, that's rookie numbers.
I'm better than that.
I've murdered hundreds and hundreds of people.
I want to talk about you and your wife's new show, Scared to Death.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. It's
How is it working with your wife?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. The only bummer has been, like, she genuinely, like, the premise was, has worked better than I kind of wanted it to, I guess. It's been the only backfire where I just thought it'd be funny. Like my wife and I used to go watch horror movies together. It was one of our favorite things to do, like, you know, love scary stuff, but she would get a little scared. And so, like, the premise, I just thought, like, oh, okay, like, a scary story is fun to tell somebody, not just to, like, tell alone, like, time suck. And I wanted to do, like, paranormal kind of, like, you know, ghost stories, supposed exorcisms, weird urban legends, things that don't really fit in time suck, because those things do interest me, and I love a good horror movie. And and then after about 4 weeks, I scared my wife so bad that, like, I thought she was going to have a fucking mental breakdown. Like, she was so freaked out, because it's like, I'm telling, like, stories that are supposedly the most credible, like, wow, man, that's weird. There was a lot of witnesses. A lot of people supposedly saw this. That's crazy that that part was documented, you know, about some supposed demon or whatever. And I did a better job than I guess I thought I was going to do, because then, like, every bump in the house was no longer just the bump of an old house. It was, you know, definitely a demon. It was definitely, you know, an angry spirit. Like, we actually had to have a talk about, like, we don't need to do this anymore if this is going to, like, ruin your brain. And then,
really?
Yeah. And then she came back from the brink, and now she's handling it okay. But
because if you don't listen to Dan's show, the way you say things is so matter of fact, but they're the most heinous things on earth.
Sure.
On Time Suck and then on Scared to Death. And it's like, if it's not somebody who's in your mindset of this, of like, oh yeah, and this happened,
right,
it was no big deal, and, you know, it was another day at the JOB.
right.
Yes, it would freak people the fuck out.
Oh yeah, yeah. I know. It is weird. Like, I've become so jaded in some sense, because I'll get crazy the other way. It's like with the horror stuff. Like, my wife's reaction is to, like, oh my God, you know, like, sage the house or whatever. My reaction is like, what if I just put a pentagram on my chest and sat in the dark basement and played a Ouija board for a while? Like, what if I...
Yeah, see what happens?
Yeah, I just... Because I'm like, part of me is like, yeah, it's scary, but part of me is like, that would be the fucking coolest thing ever to see, like, a demon dude pop up in the corner. Yeah, it'd be scary, but also it's like, that is proof that I guess I've either lost my mind, but if I haven't lost my mind, that's proof that if that thing's real, then who knows what else could be real. So, like, my personality is like, I'm tempted to, like, let's just go further with this. Let's just go full Aleister Crowley and try and fucking summon something.
Has there ever been a night where you're like, hey, let's just do a fucking seance and hire some people and get them over to the house and see what happens?
I don't trust other people. I don't trust, like, I don't think that would convince me. I would be so worried that they were full of shit. Like, I'm so skeptical.
Yeah, hucksters.
That, like, I'd almost have to do it by myself. Like, I would have to be like, I'm like, well, this is supposed to be real. I want to sit in the dark. I got the Ouija board. And then, I don't know. I would just be so worried that it would be the power of suggestion or something if there was other people. Although,
well, the power
if we saw something,
that'd
be cool.
Right?
Yeah, the power of suggestion. Oh, it's so strong.
Didn't Carlin used to do a joke about that? It was like, if you tell people that God is his own dad and he fucking saved the world from himself, they believe you. But if you put a sign that says wet paint on the wall, they'll walk up and touch it to see if the paint's still wet.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like Carlin. I don't remember that, but that sounds like his kind of logic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. For me, because I have a host a show with my wife as well.
Yeah,
Psychics have always been the thing where it was just like, hey,
that's just cold reading.
Do you believe in psychics and all that other shit? So I was like, we were out one night at a bar.
Yeah.
Kind of like a trendy, you know, hipster type bar. And there was this, like a psychic giving readings in the corner. And so I, you know, made the remark of like, is this real?
Sure.
Are you real? And blah, 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 blah. And she was like, oh yeah. You know, went into her whole life story. So I was like, great. Why don't you come on the show?
Okay.
And do this, read us both live on the show. And we switched segments. So like I left the room for a half hour. She did my wife. And then she left the room and then she did me for a half hour. And I was like, look, we'll be able to play this out 6 months later. And the audience knows you're going out to 2 million people. Like the audience knows whether or not you're full of shit or not. And,
right.
She got nothing right.
She got nothing right.
No, they never do. There have been many, many of these tests. Richard Dawkins used to hold these tests all the time for people that claim to be telepaths and various other gifts,
right,
if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would set up different kinds of tests for them to do, like a number, a ping pong ball with a number on it under a bowl. And there's five bowls there. You just walk in, no context. You just have to choose which one it's in.
Mm-hmm.
And they got it right at about the rate you would expect, which is 1/6.
One sixth
is like a random guess.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck, that's weird you say that. So in high school, there was one in high school at our graduation party.
Yeah.
It was put on by the school, and like there was each room had a little theme, like a game show or a,
yeah.
There was a psychic in one, and so it was, I think, 6 or 7 of us went into the psychic one, and we're half in the bag at this point, you know, asking, firing away with questions and everything. And we asked this lady, we go, hey, which one of us is going to die first? You know,
whoa,
it was high school graduation.
Jesus. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Totally fucking around.
It'd be funny if she pulled out a gun and shot one of you and just said,
well, she kind of did.
That so guy, where's my money, bitch?
You could tell, like, she was kind of fed up by it, but literally within like a second, she just goes, fine, it's him. He's the one that's going to die. And it was just like,
what?
I mean, it stopped all of us cold. And we were like, holy shit. You know, we were like, are you serious? And she was like, you asked. And that was the deal. You came in here and you asked the questions. I give you the answers and that's it. Yeah. Sure enough, he was the first one of our childhood friends to die.
Oh,
I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to be a psychic that only gives bad news.
Just tells you the shitty things are going to happen.
Yeah, just as a social experiment to see how it would go. Because
right.
I feel like part of the hook is the vague notion that there might be some money coming your way.
Sure.
Resolution, or that your father in hell doesn't really hate you. It was just mad about something else the whole time he was alive, or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
I just want to be the first negative psychic, like, hey man, it's not gonna work out.
Yeah. That's one of the things that kills that stuff for me and just makes me think like there's no way is you know those people who talk about like past lives and everything and they give you like your spirit reading. There was we have like a Patreon version of the show, like The Secret Suck, and on that one we do a weekly segment on wackadoodles, just psychics, people who are like alien channels, anything where they're trying to make money off of this supposed weird ability. Where, you know, they're selling books based on bullshit, or they're giving readings based on bullshit. And I did a reading, paid for like these two audio readings for this lady who is David Icke. He's the big crazy lizard Illuminati guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
David Icke psychic, this Carol Clark, was able to find out who she was, and I got two readings. And of course, when she talks about my past lives, it's like fucking Knights Templars, and it's all these like nobles, and I'm like, why isn't the reading ever come back where it's like you come from a long line of nothing but janitors? And just
You were a cattle rapist.
Right? You were a rape victim.
You didn't even work at the farm. You just showed up every week and raped one of
the
cows.
Right, exactly.
It didn't even make any sense.
Like your ancestors were nothing but pedophiles and rapists and fucking just dirtbags. And it's like it's amazing that you did anything with your life. You know, but the odds. It's like there's always like some famous, you know, you go back far enough and it's like you were Cleopatra once or you. And then the future stuff is always like these bright, you know, warm future things. And there was a guy we did a few weeks ago. I'm blanking on his name, but he was a psychic. And in his bio on his website, he said that, like, you know, by the fourth grade, you know, all of his classmates, even his teacher, knew he could read other, you know, kids' minds and on and on. Mm. And every time I read that stuff, I'm like, then go to the fucking lab, you piece of shit. Get some science, have it videotaped, do your little mind reading thing that you've been doing since fourth grade, and become the most famous person who ever lived. But no.
The richest, most famous person of all time.
The richest, most famous person of all time. But instead, you're doing weird fucking Best Western conventions in front of 30 people, you know, selling your $40 psychic book. It's like, get out of here, you snake oil salesman.
Like how how much can you really expect people to believe you if you're operate if you're a psychic operating out of a strip mall?
Right.
Like you, why didn't you just put a bunch of money in the Super Bowl or something?
Yeah, you would have been rich enough to afford a huge place to do it at.
I agree with that. Isn't it amazing how many people, what scares me about those kind of people are their followings more than the person. Like the David Icke, like whatever. Like David Icke, I get somebody being crazy. I get somebody being self-absorbed and narcissistic and a little bit insane and paranoid and writing all the weird books they write. What scares me is when they have hundreds of thousands of followers. Like a David Icke video, what he's saying doesn't freak me out nearly as much as the comment section below. And there's people, people even crazier than him. There's this one lady, Dolores Cannon, and she's dead now, but she wrote all these books about the most insane shit, about like Lemurians living in Mount Shasta, and they still talk to the Atlanteans who are still under the water somewhere, and they have nuclear trains that like on and on and on and on. And all the stuff that's definitely not real. And then you look at their like book reviews and you look at their Instagram followings and their YouTube comments, and it's comment after comment of thanks for being a bringer of light. Thank you for your truth. What the fuck?
You know what it tells me is that you could easily start a cult just the same way as they did back in the day, like with Koresh and those guys.
Yeah.
I look at Cardi B is the one for me. And I know that sounds fucked, but she has 64 million followers on her Instagram.
64 million.
64 million. She went live last week with Bernie Sanders to talk about getting the young voters out to vote for Biden.
Right.
That's what we've come. And I looked at that and I was like, that's what we've come as a culture where people who are running for president are reaching out to Cardi B to share an Instagram live video to get out to people to convince them to vote for the president of the United States. She was a stripper.
Right.
And on a reality show, and who's, you know, become a rapper and made a beautiful life for herself.
Yeah.
And congratulations. But that's not the one who should have 64 million followers that's giving presidential advice of like, yes, this person should be leading our country.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like she could create a cult. And I'm pretty sure she could get at least.
Yeah, but there's cults have been toned down now. You don't see a whole lot of things that we would call a cult, but I see plenty of cults. Like everyone that follows, for example, Gary Vaynerchuk and everything he says.
Oh yeah,
he says he tells like people who are in like people who are basically in poverty to quit your job and follow your dreams. Like
right.
That's easy for you to say when your parents gave you a $2 million fucking winery and you made your fortune off that.
right.
Like, get fucked. That's not how life works.
Yeah.
And Tony Robbins is the same way. Yep. I know that Tony Robbins is a really nice guy, but everybody that fucking thinks that you can read something in one of his books or The Purpose-Driven Life or one of these books or any of the fucking Word of Faith like Kenneth Copeland and Ken Ham.
Oh, my God. Pastor Copeland, my God.
Yeah, he's nuts.
He's fucking like, crazy.
If you think you're going to get some special insight from him and it's going to improve your life, particularly financially, then you're – and then in order to pay for that, you donate to him all of your fucking money.
Yeah.
Like, that's how cults work.
Yep.
You pay me fucking $25 for my stupid book that tells you how to make a fucking gajillion dollars. By the way, I don't have a gajillion dollars until I wrote that fucking book and you paid me for it.
Right.
If somebody wasn't already rich when they first started writing their books about how to get rich, they are full of shit.
Right. Yeah.
Period. So
I asked, a friend of mine wrote a book like that.
Yeah.
Like how to close, like something like that, you know?
Sure.
Fucking always be closing. He lived in an apartment. Him and his, you know, his wife lived in a one bedroom apartment.
Man.
And I was like, What's the story with this?
Yeah.
You know, why go out and write a book knowing what you know and do, you know? And he laughed about
it.
He was like, man, people are always out there looking for some way, some quick, you know, rich thing or some advice or something that's motivational that just kind of approves what they think.
Yeah. People are lazy and stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, there is this frustrating thing where it's like, you know, like people don't want to grind. They don't want like the truth of like, yeah, like what's your best odds of being successful? Work a lot of hours, work really fucking hard at what you have the most talent in and hope that you get a little bit of luck. That's it. Like just, you know, like bust your ass, work as smart as you can, read as much as you can about your industry, you know, just work. You know, it's this crazy thing where it's like I remember we'd get stuff when TimeSuck started to do well. People would write in and be like, hey, you know, I'm wanting to launch my podcast and I see that you're doing, you know, pretty good. And, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm hoping to get there. And I would want to just be like, motherfucker, it took me 20 years of slowly building up a couple hundred thousand fans and then having a product that matched what those 100,000 fans, you know, a couple hundred thousand fans liked, and then but it was like 2 decades of just a slow war of attrition of content. It's like that's like you just wanting it to work isn't going to make it work in 6 months. Like I learned so much about human nature when I was a personal trainer for a really brief window right out of college. And I was really into working out for a little while. And I really was like, I don't know, drinking the Kool-Aid of that world and just thought I'm going to transform people's bodies and let them live like better lives and blah, blah, blah. I probably had 60 or 70 clients total for the brief time I did it. I think literally one of them got in really good shape because they actually dieted and, you know, like watched what they ate and they did the workouts and they followed the routine for months. Everybody else would show up. Do a half-ass workout, not listen to any nutritional advice, get put on, you know, more weight or stay the same, and then eventually get mad at me. And I'm like, I'm not a fucking magician. Like, I can't just make you have a six-pack because you want one. You have to work really hard at it. And nobody wants to hear that. I feel like in life, and I feel like, you know, maybe it's like, I feel like an old man saying it, but it feels like the generation coming up, and maybe, you know, the generation above me thought the same thing about me when I was young. But it's like, you just got to fucking work hard, and it's going to take a while in all likelihood. But it's like nobody wants to hear that.
No, not at all. And going back to the podcast thing, because we get that all the time as well. Where it's just like,
yeah,
hey,
you guys have grinded hard.
I think this podcast is on its fifth year now at this point. And
built on the back of so many other things you guys, you know, like that were done before the podcast.
Yeah, books, movies, all that other stuff, right? And it's one of those things that we're like, man, I want to monetize my podcast immediately. And it was like, how long will it take? And it's like probably 100 episodes at least. Because even in the early stages, you're just trying to figure out what it is.
Right.
And who you guys are and everything else. And it takes a bunch of content from different places all over.
Yep.
The thing that pisses me off the most, and I don't know if it angers you as well, is the celebrities, the huge celebrities like Dax Shepard, who come out with a podcast and they're number two in the world. Right. And you're like, oh, man, this is easy. There was a Forbes list that came out maybe 2 weeks ago that had the richest, like, top 10 richest podcasts on there.
Yeah.
He was on there at like $9.5 million a year.
What?
And he just started like a year ago. And I'm like,
I did see his go to the top of the charts. Yeah. I know that is crazy where it's like the average person doesn't realize that you just, or I don't know how they don't realize that, but it's like, you just can't do that. Where Dax was able to tap into his connections from, I mean, he's been, I don't know, acting on some level for probably 15, 20 years. And so he has all these relationships. Yeah. And so he can have, you know, like some random person in Joplin, Missouri, you're not going to have fucking Gwyneth Paltrow stop by and hang out in your attic for an hour to talk about life. That'll never fucking happen. But it's like, but he can have that. And then you know that person can pull their followers. Yeah, they don't understand.
But
like,
can you buy a candle that smells like Dax Shepard's vagina though?
Oh my god, we made fun of her shit so hard on the what's it called? Her company,
Goop.
Goop.
We go hard against Goop,
my
dude.
God,
all
it's
the
such
time.
Bullshit. They're,
I always go back to the same example. One of the first things she really got lit up for, and I think it was actually BuzzFeed that lit her up. She put out this like.
This smoothie.
It was like a recipe for a smoothie, and she like was kind of like shaming the audience. Like, everyone should be drinking this every day. If you don't, you really don't care about your body, and it costs $80 to make it.
$80?
So like,
for one smoothie. And it was like, hey, Gwyneth, no one has $80 to spend on on a smoothie every single day.
This COVID-19 situation, like the whole shelter in place, I think has really like shown how some celebrities are so tone deaf. I'm a big fan of like a lot of Schwarzenegger stuff. You know, I like the old bodybuilding days, Pumping Iron, whatever that doc he did with Franco Colombo and those guys.
That was crazy.
It's hilarious to me though.
It's like coming.
I know.
You've got to watch it if you haven't seen it. He's like talking about how
like a good pump's better than
pump
sex.
In the gym is better than sex. And he's like saying all this fucked up shit in front of Lou Ferrigno's family.
He antagonizes the shit out of Lou Ferrigno. That whole thing.
Yeah. Lou Ferrigno is deaf, by the way, and probably the nicest human being on earth. Arnold's just sitting there talking shit to him and his mom and dad.
Yeah.
Like the whole time. But like,
and he talked about smoking it being mind games. He just talked about it like it was intentional. He knew how to fuck with Ferrigno's head and get him so when he was posing, he wasn't thinking about what he was doing. He was thinking about Arnold Schwarzenegger fucking with him. But like, all the Conan the Barbarian, the Commando, I've loved a lot of stuff he's done just as an entertainer, whatever. I think he's like an interesting dude. And then on Instagram, when 2 or 3 weeks into this, he was just really lecturing people, like kind of high horse, about basically that you're an idiot if you're not just, you know, going to ride this out and just stay in your house. It's not that bad. As he's sitting in this amazing hot tub, smoking a super expensive cigar in this beautiful home where you know that, like, he's not going to the grocery store because he has fucking staff doing all that shit for him still. And I wanted to be like, fuck you, dude. Like,
I know.
The person who just lost their job at the fucking restaurant or the small business owner isn't going to be just, like, hanging out being like, yeah, I'll just do what the governor told me to do and just hang out and enjoy my life and enjoy. It's like, dude, he never has to work again, and he gets to be rich forever.
No, and if you're going to be on his staff, try and get pregnant.
Yeah, exactly.
It's worked before.
Work for the maid. Work for the maid. My biggest thing with the quarantine and celebrities is it really shows their ass as far as, like, hey, man, when you don't have writers, makeup, wardrobe, and everything else, like, they all look like shit, you know, very gray and, like non-tanned and everything else.
Right.
And you're just like, oh, Jesus Christ, man. You really need a full team working for you, and you don't have it right now. The other thing is writers, man.
Yeah.
Where some of my favorite, you know, comedians and comedic actors, I should say, are going on trying to do funny bits and things like that. And it's like, oh, shit, you're really not funny without a good writer.
Yeah.
You know?
The stand-up world has shown that a bunch where it's like, I don't want to, like, throw names out just because they're, like, some guys I like. But, like, funny character actors who, for a brief time, like, tried to get into the stand-up circuit and, like, do a tour. And just ate shit because, you know, that's just, it's a different thing. It's like, you can be a really funny, like, weird character in a movie. That doesn't mean you can be a monologist for an hour and, like, hold a room with entertaining stories.
It's different types of, it's two different formats.
Yeah.
And then the other ones, too, with the celebrities, the ones that are just desperate for attention because they're not starring in something.
Yeah.
They're not on a red carpet. So they're going on with these weird talks about life. And you're just like, Jesus
Madonna.
Christ. And Madonna is one. And if I see the Instagram live feed, everybody's going live on Instagram.
Yep.
All of them. It's too clogged with shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, I've seen celebrity friends go on there and they're talking about, you know, getting back to like hippie roots and all this other shit. And I'm like, motherfucker, I know where you live. Like, you're not doing anything. Like, you're in your mansion
right now. No one wants to hear that shit right now either.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like, you can talk about how it sucks or doesn't suck or whatever the fuck, but don't try to advise me from your fucking ivory tower, fuckface.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I'll come up there and murder everyone.
And I think after this is over, exactly, but I think after this is over, some of these people, when they try to go back to film and TV and everything else, they're going to lose fans because it was like, man, I saw behind the curtain who you were for during whatever it was during this length of quarantine. You're kind of just a piece of shit.
Right.
And that's what it's going to be. I think they're going to lose some followers and things like that. And then the cachet of movies is kind of gone, too, for them.
Oh, yeah.
Where you see them without all this stuff and you realize they're either not funny or they're not, you know, anything interesting to say.
Yeah.
Why am I going to pay for your movies anymore? Was one of the things that I keep thinking about.
That is a weird thing with, like, social media where it's like, I feel like some of the bigger celebrities listen to their agents and managers probably too much, you know, because it's like they're always saying like, oh, this, you know, fucking TikTok is hot. You got to get on TikTok and this is hot. Yeah. It's like, no, you don't. If you're like a huge celebrity, just fucking go away for a while. Build some mystique.
Yeah.
You know, I think about like Chappelle in the stand up world. My favorite part about him is he doesn't do any of the social media bullshit. He just like he just, you know, goes and lives his life. And there's some mystery, a sense of like, oh, I wonder what he's doing, you know, and then he comes back with this great new hour of stand up. You're like, holy shit. And then you're amazed. It's like, I wonder if some celebrities are going to learn from this or maybe for future like PR stuff that they're going to be like, you know what? Maybe you don't need to be on everything. Maybe you just need to be quiet.
I don't know if those celebrities can handle being away from the attention.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what Chappelle, like Chappelle's a family dude.
Yeah.
Like, he was a family guy growing up. He's a family guy now. I think if all of it disappeared, he'd probably be fine.
Right.
I mean, money-wise, obviously, he would be fine. But I think even if he never got attention again, I think he would be fine with it.
Yeah. That is a different psychology thing, yeah.
With Chappelle's show, he got, like, fucking flooded with shit, and it ruined his personal life for a while. I think maybe a guy like that could probably just go away, right?
It is interesting seeing how it's affecting, like, other comics that way, because I'm more like that where I love stand-up. I love telling stories, love touring. but I don't need, I don't actually need the attention. Like on a psychological level, not touring hasn't bothered me at all. Cause I'm also like happy at home and I'm happy like putting creativity into a podcast or putting creativity into like other projects. It doesn't need to be that, but some of my, you know, comedy friends and stuff, I can tell that it's affecting them in a much different way. Like, you know, like they're not getting that those accolades from strangers. They're not, you know, hearing those fresh laughs and it's fucking them up mentally.
Yeah. And I'm one of those people too, where I wish I didn't have social media. I liked it before when I didn't. The only reason I got it was because I was forced to.
Yeah.
Because it became the new way to promote yourself. Sure. Because magazines and all that other stuff were dying.
Right.
So typically in the past, you paid a publicist.
Yeah.
They went out and found the press for you. They found the interviews. You did the stuff. Little by little, that is, you know, going out of style over the years.
Yeah.
And you're forced to promote yourself all day long and do all this other shit.
Right.
I always said this on my shows. I hope I get to the point where I'm rich enough where I just use a flip phone, one of those Razor flip phones,
yeah,
and you never see me post ever again. The shit I do post now is weird as fuck anyways, but I don't want to do that.
Right.
And I'm with you. Like, I love doing podcasts every single day. Mm-hmm. I love sitting there either with my wife or my best friend,
yeah,
just chatting about life for an hour and other guests and learning about people.
Right.
Like, I get to talk to people every day that I would never get a chance to talk to in real life, and I love it. No part of me craves any form of attention, like,
yeah,
outside,
yeah,
of doing the podcast, where it's like, man, if all the social media and all that stuff went away, I still love my job every,
yep,
day enough to go and do it. Even if I won the lottery tomorrow, I would still want to do podcasts every,
yep,
day.
Yep.
Just because I love it.
That's yeah. No, I have the same mentality where it's like, I love being able to connect with fans and through social media to get them to come either listen to my stand up or listen to the podcast. But that's, to me, like, mm-hmm, what the purpose is. It's just like, because,
yes,
these are,
yes,
the things I actually love to do. Like, I love researching weird shit on TimeSuck. I mean, love it. Like, love just getting in my laptop and being like, what? This guy had how many fucking people in a cage? Like, why was he doing that? You know? And then love, like, the weird stories on Scared to Death. Love writing stand-up stories and thinking about the next hour. Oh, and actually, speaking of promotion, I keep forgetting, I do have a new stand-up special that's coming out in like a week.
When is it? Do you really? Where at?
It's like, it'll be on Amazon, and basically it's not Netflix, but it's Comedy Dynamics. They did like Brian Callen's and Gaffigan's like last few, I think.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And so it'll be on like cable on demand, Amazon, all those things, and then it's on Pandora right now as like a sneak preview. But it's called "Get Out of Here, Devil," and so that was like the last hour of stand-up. But that's like what I love. I love writing stories. I love writing jokes. I love writing like podcast stuff. And then the rest of it is just servicing that.
Right.
You know, like if it wasn't for doing this, I don't know that I would be on any of the social media stuff. Because I'm more of just like, just kind of like
yeah.
It's pretty irritating.
It is.
I mean, one thing that I like is that I can literally see how people feel about what's being said or the content or the theme or whatever the case,
yeah,
is. So you can get direct feedback that way.
Yeah, that's true.
But mostly it's like half-cocked nonsense from people who don't understand the industry. And also you can't really put too much weight on one person's opinion, so that becomes problematic. I think there's some people that,
right,
don't like reading reviews and things like that. Personally, I don't give a shit. Like, My personality is geared towards not caring what people think about me.
Right, right.
So, you know, it is what it is in that regard. But I do like the data,
yeah,
part of it.
That's good, too. Yeah, I do like that, too. I will look at the reviews, and I just look for trends. If it's a few angry people, I don't put any weight into that. But if it's, like, consistently over 2 weeks, a lot of people angry about the same thing, then I'm like, okay, mm-hmm, that's something I should probably address.
Yeah.
You know?
maybe it is me.
right, truly, yeah, truly.
If it's something simple, like, could you turn the volume up a little bit? Or
yeah,
maybe if you guys just went, if you just went 10 minutes longer, that would have been way better. And a bunch of people say, like, well, I guess we're going 10 minutes longer then.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, it's a product.
Yep, exactly.
So it is what it is.
I take it seriously, too. I remember for a while I was doing a lot of pausing. And it got brought up in a lot of comments. And so I was like, okay, then that's something I can, work at. It's something I can probably.
You just did it though.
You just did it right there.
I know, but I do it less. As much as I'm doing it now, it was way worse. before this period of self-reflection. It's still bad, but it's worse. But I do like it for that. And I do like the community angle. Like, we have a private Facebook group where people genuinely help each other and, like, form friendships.
We have one of those. Yeah, we have one of those as well. And it's great.
That I love.
And it's... Yeah, because there's no algorithm to it, and you know when you post, right. And it's in real time and all that other stuff, and it's great.
Yep.
I love that aspect of it as well, and I love the subgroups of it. Like I genuinely hang out in there more than I do on like my own personal page, because you know, look, personal pages get flooded with 5,000 people, and you know half of it's political, where it's just like, man, I don't give a shit who you voted for. I don't want to fucking hear that post on my page. You
right,
know?
Right. Like,
on both sides, Republican or Democrat, I don't care. I'm just like, don't post that. Like,
yep.
I would rather see your kids or you having a good time, enjoying life, and all that other shit.
Is it so. Cult of the Curious? Is that
your
page?
That's the private. Yeah, the Cult of the Curious. That has been super rewarding, and it's not something I even really hardly ever post in. I post very rarely in there, but it's something I promote a lot, and it's just for listeners under this thing of like, hey, if you want to make some new friends. If you want to find kind of like-minded people who like the same irreverent comedy plus learning new things that you do, here's a good place to do that. And a lot of like relationships have started in there. You know, people started dating because of meeting there initially. And a lot of things where they're having a tough time, they post their GoFundMe or whatever, and they've gotten a lot of help. People have like, you know, helped other people move and just do all kinds of cool things from that. And that feels really cool. But I liked it. It, you know, people aren't really talking about, they might talk about the show, but it's not a thing where I'm posting and they're commenting to the, all the things I'm, it's not mm-hmm. like me. It's just, hey, you guys find each other. You guys, you know, mm-hmm. form your own kind of friendships and things based on some of the shit I've talked about.
Yeah. Our group's kind of the same. As a matter of fact, in September we organized a cruise and we took a couple hundred of them on a cruise.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, one of them, you remember the woman who was pregnant who Matt gave them $1,000 to name their kid Noelle?
Yeah.
Well, the middle name. We all signed her stomach or whatever. Yeah. It turns out he may be eligible for this contest I've been running. So the contest, Mr. Cummins, is that if anybody can prove that they conceived their child on a ghost bed, which is one of our sponsors, then I will give them a free ghost bed.
Nice.
Yeah, but we need video of it. We need video of the conception.
Yeah, so he sent me a message on Facebook yesterday. He was like, hey, I think I might have what you're looking for.
No fucking way.
Oh, my God.
He's got a video of it?
We'll see.
Wow, that'd be a baller move. Yeah. I'll give him the adjustable base as well for him and his missus.
Yeah.
Dan, we've been huge fans of your stand-up comedy for a long, long time, man. How long have you been a stand-up comedian at this point?
It'll be, in a few months, it'll be 20 years since the first open mic.
Holy shit.
So August 2000 was when I first went into a comedy club and did the open mic night.
That's crazy, man. So you've been on the road all these years for 20-something
years?
Yeah,
so that's been weird about this, you know, time recently is I was kind of freaking out a little bit in my brain. I was just really moody this last weekend, and I think it's just because my routine has been messed up. Like, I like being home, mm-hmm. but I have toured to some degree since 2001. I kind of jumped into doing, like, regional road gigs pretty early. So I've been, you know, going out of town somewhere to do gigs on a regular basis. Yeah, since 2001. So it's pretty strange not to know when that's going to come back.
Yeah, we host a sports show and we do the same thing. So every 2 weeks, we usually travel to whatever the biggest sporting event is in America. And that's been weird for me of like, oh, shit, we're home. We're not going to that thing or this thing doesn't exist. And I was having a conversation with my wife this morning and she was like, I bitched about something around the house and she was like, well, it doesn't matter. You'll be gone anyways when this is over next month. And I was like, actually, no, they're not bringing fans back to these events for God knows how long at this point. We don't know. Stand-up comics don't know.
Yep.
I saw Rogan had a post yesterday where he was like, somebody was out in front of Madison Square Garden with his tour date that was going to, you know, happen in two or three months.
They moved it to November 20th now, but who knows if that'll happen.
And that's what he said.
It's him and Chappelle, right?
Yeah, it's him and Chappelle. Yeah. He goes, I don't know if that's going to happen. We've gotten no word of that. Yep. And then even when shit comes back, is it going to be people social distancing where it's like, hey, man, the comedy clubs will be cut in half. The stadiums or concerts will be cut in half. And then how do you determine how close people are from each other? And especially for comedy.
Right.
Like, stand-up comedy, you need in a packed
I know. Yeah. You need people to be packed in there tight. Like it affects things dramatically. Like it's such a fragile art form that way where, you know, you tell the exact same stories. You know, it makes me think of one time I saw this, somebody had taken all the music out of Star Wars scenes. And so they had some like YouTube video.
I saw that.
It's so awkward. Where it was like a YouTube video of a Harrison Ford, you know, Han Solo, like walking across this room, big dramatic scene in the movie. But they took all the dramatic scoring out of it, and it's just like a dude's boots on this squeaky floor, and it's fucking awkward. It's a terrible scene. And that's stand-up. You take any, like, amazing special and remove the crowd, and it just looks like a lunatic.
Well, have you seen wrestling without a crowd?
I watched the WWE thing the other day without a crowd.
Like, it's dudes shouting into the stands for a reaction, which is what professional wrestlers do because it's live. It's basically a live fucking soap opera, for lack of a better phrase.
Right.
And there's no noise.
Oh, that's so weird.
The only noise is them moving on the mat and jumping around all the time. And it's like, you close your eyes and squint hard enough, it's your parents fucking in like the 80s. And you're just like,
you know what it reminds
me? It's awful.
The one thing that I'm worried about most, I think you brought it up before, is basketball, because the court squeaking is so much. Mm-hmm. Like my ex-girlfriend's husband hated. I'm sorry, my ex-girlfriend's husband was a D1 college basketball player, so he watched it, college and pro, constantly. They live in Minneapolis, so he went to the Minnesota games all the time. Huge basketball fan. She hates the sound of sneakers on the court. She makes it so when he watches it with the sound off, basically. he can watch basketball whenever he wants. No sound.
No sound.
Right? Man. But I worry about that when it comes back, because if it's is that all you're hearing, it reminds me of the Vuvuzela thing in the fucking World Cup a couple of World Cups ago. It was like whenever it was in South Africa, it was unwatchable.
You heard these horns, these loud horns,
constantly,
and they were like,
I turned off the sound.
Yes, yes, I know what you're talking about.
Constantly for fucking 2 hours. No, I watched all those games, and I didn't watch a single one with sound on.
Yeah,
which I remember that. I actually enjoyed those horns.
But somebody developed an app and started charging for it. Like, there was an app that you could watch it on your mobile device, your iPad or whatever the fuck, where it would filter that sound.
Wow. It's able to isolate that frequency.
Everything else. Yeah, so I wonder if they're going to be able to do that for the NBA. Like, are sneaker sounds going to be able to be isolated out of the mix now? And they can just put some kind of ambient noise in its place.
That's going to be so loud in an echoey, empty stadium. Yeah.
Here's what they can't stop. They can't stop the NBA players from yelling the N-word at each other constantly.
No.
Because that happens every single game.
Exactly.
I don't know if you've ever been to an NBA game and you're like near the court at all, and like while they're playing the game, they yell the N-word at each other a lot.
Oh, 100 times over and over and over again.
And a lot of profanity as well.
Oh, dude, it's
that is
going to
be hilarious if everyone can finally hear that.
I would love it. It would be great. I mean, like one of my favorite books when I was growing up was this book, and it was about baseball, right? It was like an inside look at baseball, and it talked about weird conversations that first basemen would have. Like Julio Franco, for example, hated playing first base. He hated it. And he would tell the runner on first base, like, hey, I fucking hate this. If you make that pitcher throw over here, I'm going to slap the fuck out of you with my mitt.
Really?
Yes, every single time. And every time they would do it, he would just come right across their helmet with the fucking ball and just crack their head. Like every single time. You go back and watch when he played for the Rangers when he was playing a little first base.
Yeah.
He fucking did it all the time.
That's fucking hilarious.
I love that
little
guy.
Little stories like that. I love shit like that.
Franco played until he was like 50 years old almost.
Longer than that. They don't even know because of his birth certificate.
Yeah, whenever he dies, we're going to cut him in half and count the rings and see how old he really was.
Yeah. That guy was 100 years old. Going back to your Star Wars story, though, I heard one about Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I read this article and it was on the other day.
Yeah.
And I watched it with my kid and I was like, oh my God. I heard that was originally intended to be shot as a drama. And that's
funny.
That Matthew Broderick was a serious actor and that's why he did the role. And it was supposed to be this, you know, story about this kid who was confused about life and was going through high school and everything else. And that's in the edits, the studio had gotten in there and said, look, this is a comedy, man. And like they had to just kind of get him through it.
Yeah.
So they let him do the serious shit. And at the end, the scoring, kind of like what you said in Star Wars, was different, where they played this zanier music throughout scenes. Like, oh, yeah.
Right, right.
And like when I went back and saw that, having read that article about it, I was like, oh, my God, dude. Yes. Cameron wanted to kill himself. Like, he hated his father.
Right. He hated his dad, yeah. Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wanted to die the entire time. Ferris just kind of seemed like a lost, confused kid that, like, would probably never do anything with his life.
Right.
Going through all of these characters where you're just like, oh, shit, you're right. If you would have scored that dramatically... And I know that trailer's gone around with Mrs. Doubtfire scored as a horror movie.
I think I did see that. Was that a long time ago?
Yeah. And you're like, that was a joke, but this right. one wasn't. And as I went back and watched that movie, there was a lot of scenes where they're just driving or... Remember when they go to the art museum in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and they're... You know, where they're with the little kids and everything.
The guy takes his car or whatever.
Yeah.
And the valet takes his car and drives it.
But it's very
like crazy.
Serious, you know, in that art museum. Yeah, and I was like... All right, I wonder if the rest of the movie was like that. How would that have played out?
Why would they consider him a serious actor? I guess he was in War
Games.
He
considered himself a serious actor.
Oh, but he was like 12 years old. So that's the difference. Who gives a shit? Fuck him.
Well, after that, because, dude, he went on and did Glory, and he refused to do the sequel. So they wanted to do a sequel of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
He wanted to be taken more seriously?
No.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he wanted to do a sequel for Glory. What would that be?
Oh, no.
He has a very limited understanding of history.
Bring him back to life?
They're like refighting the Civil War.
Right, right.
Like, fuck you guys. We're back. Although they're all dead, but.
But they're back.
Biloxi Blues, too. That was a good movie.
Yeah, he did a lot of serious shit, and that's kind of who he wanted to be. And I knew like as of like 15 years ago, 15 or 20 years ago, there was a script of a sequel that was circulating Hollywood where it was them grown up. And
oh God!
They were. No he way. Was working at like some cubicle job.
Yeah,
and I read it, and it was. He was working in like a cubicle. Hated his life, just moving up the corporate ladder, and they wanted him and Cameron to go and ditch work,
right,
and then go out for the.
They
day
made that
the
movie. It's
thing.
Called Office Space.
Probably,
yeah.
But he wouldn't do it,
and it was
like,
way
no.
better. Office Space is way better than this sequel that you're talking about ever could have been.
Oh man, Mike Judge.
Yeah. Office Space is a great fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great movie, great movie. But they've tried over the years with certain movies like that. They tried to do Fletch. There was like 50 iterations of Fletch coming back, and at one point it was Jason Lee who was cast in it, and then the kid from Dawson's Creek,
Josh, whatever.
Yes, yeah, he was cast as Fletch, and I was like. Man, I don't think you can do that again, you know?
I can't imagine, like, if I was a young comedic actor, I wouldn't go anywhere near that.
No.
I'm not trying to compete with fucking Fletch. Are you kidding
me?
Yeah.
There's no way. Like, why would you try to, like, become the new Fletch?
Yeah.
No, that'll never happen.
Look, there's too much money involved now. People are just like, back up the truck. Let's do it. But
even with movies and stuff, I think about how this is going to, like, when are those going to start going into production again? Like, new seasons of shows? They got to lift a bunch of stuff to get... things filmed again, right?
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
they're well behind.
To get them filmed as well, but which is going to create a gap. But then, like, how much money are the studios are going to spend on stuff that they expect a theatrical release for when they don't know in the theaters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So are we only going to see people making content for direct publication?
Yeah, it's weird that you said that. So there was an article this morning, Melissa McCarthy's new movie. They shot a four-minute sizzle and then sold it off of that to Netflix for $20 million off of a four-minute sizzle reel. And you can tell that they're planning for the future just in case.
Yeah.
Because, again, when they do open up theaters, and they have in China, they've opened up theaters in China, they said the numbers are really low. They were like, the most people we've gotten there is like 50. And because you have to sit six seats apart and, you know, do all that other shit. And it's like now that people are also conditioned to watching movies and content inside their home – on their 70, 80-inch things, it's going to take a lot more to get people to get out of their house and go to a movie.
Only teenagers are going to go to movie theaters. Like, literally.
Maybe.
Like, older people, no, we're going to stay home and drink our booze that we've already paid for.
Yeah.
And not pay $75 for fucking bullshit.
That's sick.
When's the last time you went, Dan?
I went to the movies probably, I don't know, 2 months ago or something. I get annoyed by people talking. Like, that is a frustration. I just stopped going for a while. To the movies because I did like yell at some people that just because I just
when you were on TRT
what
when you were on testosterone you were just
no this was after that this was after that I was still it's just such a pet peeve it's just so disrespectful just like snapped at some people and I was like all right man chill out for a while but I would go back. I do like certain kinds of films. I do like to see them in the theater, although we do have a pretty nice little home theater now, but I still like the movie theater experience. But that's just so weird about it. I wasn't even thinking about 6 feet apart and stuff. That stuff drives me one of those people that's going to necessarily, like, you know, be running down to the Capitol steps with my guns and just, like, protesting, like, shelter in place. Right. But when they start talking about, like, you know, months from now, we got to still, like, at the movie theater, I mean, what, we can't, you know, have to be 6 feet apart or whatever. Then I do get a little crazy in my head where I'm like, this isn't the fucking plague. Like, what is happening? Like, right. I know this. I know it's not just the flu, but it's also not the Black Death. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, I'm going to be so fucking sad if this fall that there's still not, like, major sporting events and stuff with people in the stands. I mean, and I know people are going to get sick, but.
Or stand-up. Stand-up, man.
I know.
I mean, dude, your profession, like, right? Dude, it is best if it is packed. The reason I quit back in the day was, I, you know, you do enough of these gigs and there's only 30 people, 40 people in there. You either have to love it and it is your life,
yeah,
where you're like, fuck, man, I want to kick the shit out of it tonight for these 40 people.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
And there's a million diehards who are like that. And they're like, oh, man, who cares? These 30 or 40 people are going to get the best goddamn show of their life tonight.
Right.
Or there's others where, like me, I was just like, meh, what am I doing this for? There's 30 people out tonight. I mean, I could go out to a bar and tell the same jokes.
Right, right. No, no. That, and just before this happened, I was like, you know, we just got into a nice spot where the clubs were packed. We were kind of like adding shows. And I was like, okay, 20 years, grinding it out, got to this point. Like, mentally, if I have to go, like, to back to a world where it's like, okay, now there's 40 people in here because they all got to sit 6 feet away from each other. Yeah, that's gonna be. I don't know if I'm gonna.
I think a lot of people are gonna rebel at that idea. Probably about 45%, which is about how many vote for conservative politicians. Because the conservatives they've made a move recently. I don't know why exactly. It's maybe I think everybody's just bored, to be honest. So if you see people acting crazy right now, they're probably just bored. But like protesting stuff right now, like, come on, man.
Yeah,
is that really what you got to do right now?
Hey, I've seen it. We live in a small town here in Wilmington,
yeah,
and I've seen three protests in the last 3 days.
Yeah, there was protests yesterday here in Coeur d'Alene. Yep, there's a bunch of people downtown. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of lefties in Coeur d'Alene, right? no, there's what we're seeing right now is a confluence between years of pussification of American culture, mm-hmm, and then the other part is the widespread distrust of anybody that's in power.
Yeah.
Whether it be the media or the government. Like, no one trusts anybody to tell them what's actually going on anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And or they trust somebody that reposts something on Facebook to tell them.
It's right.
Like one of those two things. Right. And then everybody that actually trusts what's going on, they're all pussies. Right. The only body that's still really invested in the US government is the left, because that's what they depend on to continue pushing their message. So those people are the ones that, like, 30% of them believe that you can rub fucking, I don't know, like, mint oil on your feet and you can cure cancer. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, these groups of people, it's just this weird confluence of different like factors, different outside stimuli that are causing everybody to be crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense for a lot of people to be crazy right now, because, like, everything that you're saying, you know, like, there is this distrust and stuff. And then with this issue specifically, the articles and just, you know, news pundits talking about it, they have been all over the map, you know, with the information that's been given out. So it is a little like it's almost like a weird psychological experiment where it's like, who wouldn't go a little crazy after a certain while in this situation? Where one day you're told this, and then the next day you're told something completely opposite, and then 2 days later, you know, I remember for the first 2 weeks of this, I was on the news all the time, being like, oh, okay, all right, this is what it looks like now. I'm talking to my wife, and I'm like, oh, okay. And the last week, I've just been like, fuck it, nobody knows anything. We're being managed by a fucking, you know, group of clowns. Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, no one can agree on anything.
I'm the same, man. You hear all these numbers, and some of them are inflated, some of them are deflated, mm-hmm, and you're just like...
Well, if you're one of those people that doesn't, like, sit on one side or the other,
right,
or necessarily get your news just from one place, here's the process that you've seen so far. So it's China,
mm-hmm,
and everything they said was bullshit. And then Europe, everything they said was kind of correct, mm-hmm, but also way inflated because China didn't give good data. Then you hear from us, or from the World Health Organization... And even they back then, remember, this was like, what was it, February, like the middle of February, they were criticizing the Trump administration for even considering doing travel bans and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
The World Health Organization was doing that in mid-February. That wasn't that long ago. And then you start hearing from the Trump administration, and it's all these sweeping measures. Then you hear about the governor shutting stuff down and blah, blah, blah. There's critics on both sides. Mm-hmm. People have been very critical of Trump. Then you go back, or then you get to the response to Trump's activities over the course of about 2 weeks, and it's mostly the left criticizing, because that's what they do, obviously. It's politics. But then the rebuttal from that is videos of Nancy Pelosi walking through Chinatown in San Francisco telling people to come visit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like nobody knows what the fuck is going on.
Right. It's very confusing.
No one in power agrees, and it's gone from like extreme to extreme in a very rapid period so many times.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that.
You can't keep saying oh. At some point, you got to fucking get up and make breakfast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I just want to walk out in the street. If I die, I die, and that's it. I haven't changed my life in any way, shape, or form. Like, I'll try not to go near old people, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's what my wife and I have done. Yep. With my grandparents, like in their 80s. Told them, like, please stay inside. We're not going to visit you for a while. I personally, just based on everything I've understood about it, I'm not worried for me personally. I'm still, shaking people's hands when they come over and doing that kind of stuff. Like, I'm probably washing my hands a little more. But actually, not really. Like, maybe I was initially.
Yeah, same.
Maybe I was initially. Yeah. And now I'm just like, I don't know. Fucking, okay. Like, because what I think is like, yeah, this thing is bad, and you know, it'd be terrible to die of it, but it would be terrible to die of a whole bunch of other things that were out before this thing came around that were also had a decent chance of killing me at some point. So to me, I'm like, I'm not that freaked out. Like, this is just one more in a huge litany of so many things that can kill me. But other people have a very different reaction where they're just like, oh my God. And then they're reading about the death toll. I'm like, motherfucker, cancer kills way more people every time. Like, all these other things are killing more people. Why are you fixated on this one new thing all of a sudden? It's like,
people don't understand statistics. I feel like that class should have been everybody that goes to college complains about the class statistics. Clearly no one actually paid any fucking attention.
So important,
because if only 60 to 70% of people are even capable of being infected by this,
right?
And then there's a maximum of about a 1.5% death rate. Do you understand like how little a chance there is of you dying from this shit?
And out of that 1.5, how many of those are like 75 and older or have compromised immune systems? It's like if you're 30, 40, 50 years old and you're in good shape, the odds of this thing killing you are extremely low.
Lower than getting hit by a car walking, which actually that number has probably gone down because there's no walking.
I almost did after work the other day. I was walking by a car. I wasn't looking, and I was like, "Oh, motherfucker, man!" I was too paranoid about the COVID thing, and I forgot about the car.
What a weird stat that would be if you could somehow in a magical world track it of like people on their phones, anxious about COVID-19, walking out in front of cars and getting fucking hit and killed.
Just getting smoked.
Smoked.
I was walking my dogs yesterday down Front Street, and this little bird kept trying to attack one of my dogs, but not really. It was kind of funny. I was super high. It may not have happened.
Not at all.
So I'm walking the dogs, and this one bird just keeps swooping over Morty's head just repeatedly. And I'm like, what is this bird trying to play? I figured it just had a nest somewhere nearby. It was trying to be territorial and protect it. So I was watching it out of the corner of my eye, and then one time it came off a light post and tried to swoop down there, and I just turned around and flipped it off like this, and it flew away. I feel like I have magic powers now.
Maybe. Or you're just getting really, really high. Like, really, really high. Were your dogs wearing masks?
No, they don't wear – why would they wear masks?
Some people are telling their pets, your pets can get it. Mask on your pets.
Oh, one of my favorite trolls right now are people that are going out in public with the wrong kind of mask. Like, one guy had just, one over his eyes, like the Phantom of the Opera style. But I want to get, like, a Gimp mask and start walking around in public with it. And then, like, go to the register and the lady starts asking me a question. I have to unzip it to answer.
Take out the gag ball after
and then put it all back on before I leave. And thanks, man.
Thank you. Have a great day. Have you worn a mask at all? I haven't worn one once. Not one single time.
My wife shamed me at Trader Joe's a while back, and she and I wasn't wearing it. She had like the little, almost like a painter's mask. And I told her, I'm like, this doesn't do anything. And then she's like, well, the CDC said, I'm like, I don't care. And then we went in there, and then my kids, they also had theirs. And so it was like 3-on-1, where there's like, dad, like everyone else has one in the store. So I put it on, and then went in this, and then immediately after we paid, I just ripped it off and just fucking crumpled up and threw it away. Like I was,
yeah,
like,
you regretted it.
I was so mad that
this
I was
is
shamed
something
into wearing it.
I haven't heard the hippies talking about this yet, but there's going to be a ton of refuse from this whole thing. A lot of nitrile gloves, a lot of rubber plastic gloves.
Oh, yeah.
That are
right.
just being thrown away. And then a lot of masks that are being thrown away. Where are you, hippies? Aren't the animals more important than human beings?
Yeah.
Pick a fucking side, bitch. I mean, look, it's been years now with this shit. Pick a side.
Pick a side.
And if information comes out that's critical to your side, all you got to do is change your side. You
that's
know
it.
That, right?
Like, if all you're of not sudden, stuck there forever.
No. Yeah,
if all of a sudden things change. You can change.
Right.
That's possible.
That is possible. That is possible.
The Republicans used to be very anti-interventionists back in the day, the Monroe Doctrine.
Yeah. Right?
The Democrats started the Klan. I think that one's flipped, too. So
that's flipped.
It's like, things can change is all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's all we're saying. Dan, where can everybody find your stand-up special?
They can find it on all the audio platforms, Pandora, Spotify, all that stuff. And then they can find it on video, Amazon, Cable on Demand, and a whole bunch of other places that I saw on a spreadsheet that I don't remember.
Of course. What's the exact date that it comes out?
It comes out on video the 28th of April, and then it comes out – it's on Pandora now, and then it comes out every other audio platform on May 1st.
That's great. Look, you're one of the very best doing it. Now's the point in the show where we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week.
Yay.
Which is someone
Thank
who's
you.
Inspired you or helped you to become the man you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
I'm gonna give it to my grandpa. I'm gonna give it to Papa Ward. Just a good dude, hardworking dude, worked at a mill, his majority of his working life and spent his weekends setting up rentals, building them with like true man stuff where didn't hire somebody to help build him, like built these houses on his own, hired somebody to help him for little things here and there, built like six little rentals in Riggins, Idaho, and set up a nice little retirement for himself, and he's been playing the slot machines now at the Indian casinos for the last 30 years and enjoying himself after all that work before, but just like a good family dude and my work ethic and definitely comes from him. And just trying to be like humble about stuff and like work hard, whatever happens from that happens. And don't be cocky. Don't be a dick. He's also very, kind of middle of the road guy when it comes to politics and stuff. And, just seems to, think for himself. I don't know. I could go on and on. But my grandpa Ward, awesome, awesome dude.
That's awesome, man.
By
Cheers.
The way, if you've Cheers. Got a, if you're in our age group, by the way, you've got a 0.000% chance of dying from COVID.
No shit.
Oh my God, that low. Yeah.
So Look get fucked with this bullshit, dude. I'm going to cough right in your fucking face, Alec.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for coming on.
It's always a pleasure. You're one of the best to do it. If you haven't heard Time Suck with Dan Cummins, it's dude, you have one of the best podcasts on the planet.
Oh, thanks, man. It's been a nice
intricate
escape.
And well-researched and... Man, it's just a fucking blast, man. You feel like you're getting just a nugget of joy once a week out of there. And then your new show with your wife is Scared to Death.
Yeah, Scared to Death.
You guys have a great rapport on there. Yeah, you guys have a great rapport. She's great at it, so please tell her we said hello.
Oh, I will. Yeah, and I love the sets looking better and better. You got more stuff than you had, I think, last. I know last time you came to the hotel, but when I was checking stuff out, you got more doodads around.
More sponsors.
Yeah,
more sponsors.
We've got
and
some
I'm
wrestlers. We've got OJ.
Yeah, we get a bunch.
Pretty much all you
we
need.
We actually have a signed Fletch. We got a signed Fletch up behind
us. Oh, yeah, we do
too.
Have a Fletch right behind me. Right
yeah, here. Signed. Signed by Mr. Chevy Chase himself, yeah. Thanks for being here, dude. For Dan Cummins, Dan Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.